greeted me by name, explaining that he'd been on the QV all day with instructions to bring me to Napier's tent as soon as I was sighted, which would have been flattering if I hadn't, as you know, been leery of generals who can't wait to see me. With good cause, for... "I wonder, Sir Harry, if you'll be good enough to wear this," says he, holding out a long hooded cloak of the kind the heavies wore in those days, "and my Griselda will look after your cindies." I looked from the cloak to him and his Griselda, who was throwing me a salaam and calling my escort to attention, and the tiny doubt that had been stirring at the back of my mind since Speedy had rejoiced at my being with the expedition grew suddenly into a dreadful foreboding as he put the cloak into my reluctant hand. "What the devil's this?" I demanded.
"If you would please keep it close about you," says he. "Sir Robert wishes your presence to be known to as few people as possible, especially the enemy, that is, our Abyssinian friends. There are a number of them moving about our lines, you see. Oh, perfectly cordial, merely curious.
And why the hell shouldn't they see me? I ain't in Purdah."
"Sir Robert thinks it best, sir."
He was pink but firm, all of 20, but not to be overawed, even by the famous Flashy.
"Indeed, he insists. So, if you wouldn't mind, sir, the hood will conceal your features, you see."
It was ridiculous. Alarmingly so, but there was no use to protest. I threw the cloak round my shoulders, drew the hood forward, and followed over the crest and down the slope to our lines, already lit by storm lanterns against the gathering dusk. Sure enough, there were tall Ab warriors, and womenfolk and children, moving among the tents, staring at our fellows and the Jawans, who'd plainly been put on their best behaviour, for they were calling greetings to the Abs, offering them seats by the fires, glad-eyeing the Shoho girls and letting the Chicos play with their equipment. My conductor led the way to a big marquee set apart, with a couple of dragoons with drawn sabres at the fly, and the gigantic figure of Speedy between them, handing me down and ushering me inside.
"None of the press gang saw him?"
My escort assured him they hadn't. This was too much, and I said so. "Of all the damn nonsense, Henty's seen me, hasn't he? Why shouldn't the rest of them?"
"Henty's safe," says Speedy. "The rest ain't. Least of all, the confounded nosy Parker Stanley. You know him, the Chicago Waller. He'd trumpet your arrival to the four winds.
And who'd give a mad clergyman's fart if he did? Why shouldn't he? Oh, the blazes with this. Where's Bob Napier, then? Or has he gone off the deep end, too?" I flung off the cloak and was about to give my disquiet full flow when I realised that my auditors, the escort, Speedy, and the bookish-looking sapper captain, were glancing apprehensively at the far end of the tent. And there he was, the bug hunter in person. And even in my agitation, my first thought was that if ever a played-out veteran needed a long furlough, he did. He'd always looked middling tired, with his downturned brows and pouchy eyes and drowsy moustache. But now he was old, too, regarding me with a tolerant but weary smile as he rose from behind his table and came forward under the lamp.
"You must not mind Sir Harry's John Company manners, gentlemen," says he. "The first time I heard his voice, he was addressing a Governor-General of India in the most cavalier terms. You remember the great diamond 20 years ago at Kasaur?
And blessed if he wasn't bright-eyed with memory.
Give me your hand, old comrade, and welcome indeed, for I never was so pleased to see anyone, I can tell you."
That was the moment when I knew, beyond all doubt, that the doom had come upon me yet again. If you've read Tom Brown, you may remember a worthy called Crab Jones, of whom Hughes said that he was the coolest fish in Rugby, and if he were tumbled into the moon, this minute he'd pick himself up without taking his hands out of his pockets. Bob Napier had always reminded me of Crab. In the Sikh War, the Mutiny, China, and along the frontier, the same sure, unhurried style, the quiet voice, the methodical calm that drove his more excitable subordinates wild. He was also the best engineer in the army, and the most successful commander of troops I ever knew. He was nearing 60 in Abyssinia, and if he looked worn, it was no wonder. We'd shared several campaigns, but he'd had the rougher passage every time, thanks to his talent for getting in.